This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Saber, production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today, we're talking about meat pies. Meat pies.
Meat pies.
Yep.
Yes. The craving is already real.
Oh, it is so intense.
Yeah. This is a really good meat pie time.
It is.
For a lot of reasons.
Well, okay, sure. So it's Friday the 13th, the day that this is coming out.
Yes. And Pie Day is tomorrow, which if you don't know, but you probably do, because who doesn't like pie? Who doesn't like pie?
The number or the food.
Exactly. It's based on kind of a riff on the number 3.1459, so on. March 14th, 3.14.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. By the way, producer Tyler can recite off the top of his head very quickly about the first 80 digits of pi.
Yes, and he has it in his bathroom. He has like a framed photo of it, which we know because we play D&D together. Also, we're friends. But
well, sure.
Yeah.
If you want to hear him do that, I've got an episode about Pi Day on my other show, Brain Stuff, that's coming out tomorrow. And at the end, he does a recitation.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's really cool.
That's so cool.
I was, like, reading it off the script and screwed it up. And he, like, cut in and he was like, hey, I'm sorry. I just really have to do this. And he just, like, did it for 20 seconds. And I was like, oh, my gosh, it's so good.
We work with the coolest people.
I know, right? I love it. Okay, anyway, so
yes.
So yes. Pies.
Pies. So, yeah, we were trying.
You frequently celebrate Pie Day, the P-I Pie Day with pies, P-I-E's.
Yes. A lot of free pies around Atlanta.
Sure.
And probably wherever you are as well.
Sure.
Yes.
Also Friday the 13th, a good spooky day.
Yes. So we thought, how can we combine Friday the 13th and Pie Day? Meat pies.
Yes.
Because they do feature in a lot of revenge plots.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, a lot.
We're going to go into it in a minute.
We are. Also, just wanted to note, Georgia Tech, my alma mater, they do an annual Pi Day run. And we have the Pi Mile, so you can see
cute.
Across campus. So if anyone actually is probably canceled.
Oh.
Oh, sad.
Okay.
Sad. But meat pies, I love them.
Oh, yeah, me too.
My mom made, scientifically the best, chicken pot pies. And I used to make shepherd's pie for any Harry Potter related event.
Oh, sure.
Yes. And I remember the first time I had a meat pie in Australia, and it was really cold outside, and the pie was so warm, and it was so wonderful. It just sticks out in my brain, that experience. And I had them all the time in the UK and New Zealand. We don't really, here in the US, it's harder to find these hand meat pies.
Yeah.
But in those places, they were everywhere. And so I took advantage.
Oh, absolutely.
There is a meat pie place. They also do sweet pies, but they do both in the mall next to what I call Dragon Con territory, which is
downtown Atlanta.
Yeah. And it's helped me get through many a Dragon Con.
Oh, gosh. I don't think I've ever had one of those, and now I need to look for them. But anyway, yes. My dad would make a chicken pot pie for, like, at work and bring some home sometimes because he was a chef or a cook, depending on how you want to phrase it. It was definitely one of his, like, work-only dishes, though. He would not cook that at home. I think that he hated rolling out pastry dough as much as I do.
That's fair.
Oh, gosh, I know, right? But gosh, do I love a meat pie. That one time that I was in England for, like, a week— I had, like, about one meat pie per day, maybe a little less, maybe a little more. There was this meat pie restaurant down the street from our hotel in Reading called Sweeney and Todd.
Oh. That's good, yeah.
The most spectacular one I had was this lamb shank pie at a pub called the Coal Hole in London.
Coal Hole?
Yeah, it's this former coal cellar for the Savoy Hotel, and they baked a whole dang bone-in lamb shank into the pie with, like the shank part, like the bone sticking up out of the crust. And it was so good. It was so good.
Wow. I have never had such an epic meat pie experience.
I was also drinking a lot of pub ale at the time. drink responsibly. But at any rate, I totally recommend the Coal Hole.
Strong recommendation from Lauren listeners.
In London. Anyway, yes.
Well, I've certainly got to up my savory meat pie game. And this is also partially inspired by a recent guest appearance that Lauren and I did.
Yeah. So if y'all know Chef Richard Blaze, he was a contestant on Top Chef way back in the day. He's had a couple restaurant concepts open up here in Atlanta. He's got a podcast probably coming out with iHeart probably within the next couple months. Mm-hmm. It's called Food Court. And every episode, Richard plays the judge in a case of, like, X versus Y.
Yeah.
And so Annie and I did pie versus cake.
Yes. Yes. And we will keep you updated.
Oh, yeah. We'll let you know when it drops. It was very intense.
Yeah. And I think that's in part because we are both intense, perhaps.
That is.
I don't think it was meant to be as intense as we made it.
Yeah, apparently not. But, you know, we had a good time.
We had a good time and we have our way of doing things. Okay? We have standards to uphold for our food drink podcast we thought we had to represent.
Yeah.
And we certainly represented
something.
Something. It was fun. It was fun.
It was.
But okay, let's get to our question.
Yeah.
Meat pies. What are they?
Well, a meat pie is a type of pie that contains seasoned meat, generally among other contents like vegetables and or grains and or sauce. So you're talking about a flour pastry crust with savory fillings, baked or pan-fried or deep-fried. Those fillings are usually cut into bite-sized or smaller pieces for the ease of eating the final product and are sometimes pre-cooked or par-cooked. The fillings are sometimes mixed with a thick sauce or gravy to lend moisture to the product, you know, like keep the crust tender and prevent the crust from burning, while also making the filling more cohesive so it doesn't, like, crumble or spill out as you eat the pie. That crust, it can be thick or thin, crumbly or flaky or chewy, fully enveloping or just a bottom. Sometimes the crust is also par-cooked before you put the ingredients in. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, these pies can range in size from handheld to single-serving to multi-serving. They're usually served warm, and the result, it varies.
It does.
Because every culture, I mean, write in if you know one that has not, but, like, every culture that I know of that has had access to wheat and also eats animals has developed its own versions of the meat pie.
It does seem that way.
The ones we're maybe most familiar with here in the United States are the aforementioned chicken pot pie, which is a oven-baked, like, flaky crust pie containing a creamy chicken and vegetable stew, and then ground beef-based pies like shepherd's pie, also aforementioned, which is oven-baked with, like, a pastry crust bottom, a filling of ground beef and vegetable stew in brown gravy, and then a top crust of mashed potatoes.
So good.
Oh, it's so good. Oh, but gosh, like maybe you've had Indian samosa, those triangular deep-fried hand pies that sometimes contain meat. Mm-hmm. Or the related and also triangular Middle Eastern sambusak. I'm realizing as I'm saying this out loud that I've never said it out loud before. If I'm saying it wrong, just let me know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
Then there's tortiere, double-crusted meat pie out of Quebec.
Or Chinese xianbing, which are pan-fried, like a heavier pot sticker, sort of. Mm-hmm. Or empanadas from Spain and Portugal and South America and the Philippines. Empanar, meaning to wrap in bread, though all kinds of dough are used these days, depending on the starch available in the location. Or Moroccan pastilla, or Cuban pastelitos, or Cordish and other pasties. Is calzone a meat pie?
Dun, dun, dun.
Is it?
Ooh.
Yeah. I don't know.
I know in the brief research I did for that aforementioned Richard Blaze thing, people have strong opinions about every certain type of pie, whether it's a pie or not. Like if it has a bottom crust but no top crust, everything. So I'm sure some people would consider it a meat pie and others would not. But listeners, you can write in your opinions.
Absolutely.
We would love to hear them.
We would.
But in the meantime, some fun etymology for you.
Mm-hmm.
The word pie probably came from the Latin word for magpies.
What?
Yes.
That's great.
Bird. Yes, it's so good. So prior to the 1600s, these birds were just called pies or pies. But why name the food after them? Perhaps after their habit of sticking all kinds of things in their nest. And that's a solid definition of pie throughout history. All kinds of things have and still do go into that filling.
Sure.
Yeah. And this is how we got sayings like eat crow and 4 and 20 blackbirds. The name could also be inspired by the black and white plumage of magpies and the appearance of medieval times, which at the time, the crust was like very white and the insides often
very dark. Okay.
Yes. There are records of folks using pie as an adjective for things that had black and white patches, like piebald horses.
Oh.
So possible.
Sure.
Yes. Magpies also went by haggis, and haggis recipes at the time called for all kinds of things, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
good
delightful.
Good on you, magpies.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Perhaps not as delightful the nutrition.
Meat pies will certainly fill you up and keep you going. So much fat and protein.
Mm-hmm.
They're usually heavy on the fat and the salt and the carbs. Low on veg. I would say pair it with a nice green salad.
Yeah. Always recommending a salad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
Enjoy them.
Enjoy them. Yeah.
Right.
I feel like, and this is no, please don't angrily write in about this, but when we were in Harry Potter World in Universal Orlando, the theme park, which is supposed to be in London.
England-y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of the meat pies they have there do come with a salad.
Oh, they do. That's
yeah.
right. Yeah.
Yeah,
I consumed one of those, indeed.
But we are aware that that is not necessarily the most accurate representation
no.
of the culinary scene in the UK, but just one of my more recent experiences with meat pies.
Yeah, sure, yes. I mean, for best nutrition, you should probably pair literally everything you eat all the time with a green salad, mm-hmm. but...
Ice cream and salad.
Yeah.
The official recommendation of Savor.
Oh, no.
We've lost so many people right then.
I can hear the subscriptions going down.
But we do have kind of some numbers for you.
Okay, yeah. So global numbers would take a lot of compiling
yes.
that I didn't want to do, to be super honest with you guys. But
right.
I will say that perhaps especially throughout the former British Empire, but it seems like really everywhere, like the aforementioned everywhere, meat pies are a nostalgic comfort food, if not a health food. So the balance between those two factors has led to a rise in meat pie sales through the first decade of the 21st century as, like, recession was happening and stuff like that. And then something of a dip in the second decade of the 21st century during those Halcyon times when people didn't feel like the world was on fire for just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone trying to eat a little healthier and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as a planet, we are still eating just a lot of meat pies.
Yes.
Even some of the movements in some wealthier populations to move away from meat have been balanced out by some of the up-and-coming populations moving towards meat. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, and this episode we're going to do more of an overview, but as we said, there are so many different types.
Oh, gosh, and we could do a full history on pretty much all of these.
Exactly. What a fun mini-series that would be.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps one day. But let's talk about that revenge meat pie thing.
Yes. Okay, yes. So this is glorious. This is one of my very favorite things.
Yes. I'm so glad you came up with this. So, yeah, there have been so many cases of meat pies used for revenge in our pop culture, usually via a person chopped up and then cooked into a pie and then fed to an unsuspecting target for revenge. Usually it's somebody that the person who is eating the pie knew and cared about, but not always.
Not always.
Yes.
Sometimes it's just chaos.
It's absolute chaos in the revenge meat pie world. One of the most famous examples comes from Shakespeare's Titus Andronicus. For part of his revenge, Titus kills the two men and bakes them into a meat pie, which he serves to their mother before killing her, too.
Two of the kind of villains of the piece. You could argue, and I'm not going to get into Shakespeare with y'all that hard, but I will say that it's one of those reveal lines because part of the fun, part of the quote-unquote fun, I'm sorry, I'm so weird and goth, part of the fun of these revenge pies is that there's always the moment
when they realize.
There's usually this moment where, like, someone is like, oh, man, where's this person? And someone else is like, you're eating them right now, lols.
Yeah. And then they, like, realize they see something in there, and they're,
Yeah. And that moment in Titus Andronicus is in rhyme, because of course it is. Why, there they are both, baked in that pie, whereof thy mother daintily hath fed, eating the flesh that she herself hath bred.
Oh.
Yeah.
Gross.
Super gross.
Also, I saw the movie when I was probably really too young to see that movie, maybe 11.
Oh, no. Oh, no, that's an inappropriate time to see that film.
I have not returned to it because I remember being so disturbed by this. And then the guy who got buried up to his shoulder, it was just his head.
Sure.
And he was going to be left there to die. That really freaked me out, too.
Of course it did. Welcome. I was like, I'm like 10 years older than you, and I was freaked out when I saw that. So,
Yeah.
I will also say that the excellent Vincent Price film, Theater of Blood, if you're not familiar.
Theater of Blood.
Theater of Blood, it's about all of these murders based on theatrical stuff.
Oh.
And so there's a scene in that riffs on this Titus meat pie thing.
Okay.
It is so, everyone go out, anyone who's like a lit nerd, theater nerd, go out and watch it right now. Vincent Price is beautiful.
After this is done. But in the meantime,
mm-hmm.
back to that Sweeney Todd thing.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
Right.
So for those not familiar, he was a barber from Fleet Street. London.
Fictional,
yes.
Yes.
Although, I did read some articles about, is he real? Who was he based on? But anyway, and he gave his partner in crime, after he would kill victims, he would give them to his partners in crime, Mrs. Lovett, who would bake them into pies, sometimes called the worst pies in London.
Well, they were the worst pies in London before she started putting humans in them, and then they were so delicious, she started selling out all the time.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Upsetting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then Game of Thrones gave us one of our most recent examples of a revenge meat pie. No spoilers. It exists in there.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I suspect that these latter examples were inspired by the first, by Titus, which was itself inspired by all of these Greek revenge myths, like the Thyestean banquet, in which Thyestes is served his own sons, and the myth of Procne, who serves her husband, their son, and maybe specifically where Shakespeare got his idea for Titus, and the slightly more historical tale of Harpagus, a general who has served his own son, or other Greek myths about eating and serving your children, from Cronus to Tantalus to Lycaon, although none of these are done in pies.
Sure.
Interesting. Yeah. Or not to my personal knowledge. I've never seen a translation be like, it was pie format.
Right. And that can be kind of tricky, but I've never really considered other forms of revenge pies. Or not revenge eating of your children.
Oh, there's that South Park episode. Scott Something Must Die.
Okay.
It's a bowl of chili.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Cartman's all like, made to eat your parents.
Well, now I have this concern, though perhaps I shouldn't.
But no, I mean, it is a whole trope. It is a whole popular enough trope that it has its own category in TV tropes, among many other cannibalism tropes, called familial surprise cannibalism.
That's one of my favorite things I've heard in a while. Familial surprise cannibalism.
Like, thanks, humanity. Like, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
At least we all agree that it's monstrous.
Yeah.
Well. If in an entertaining way.
Indeed.
Well.
Mm-hmm.
And of course.
Of course.
Not revenge-wise, but just baking people into pies-wise. There is an episode of Hannibal that features a human kidney pie. The crust on it is even stamped with, like, the design from the face masks that are used on criminals in that franchise.
Really?
It's really cute.
I know that I've seen it, and I was always slightly disturbed by how delicious everything looked in that show.
Oh, yeah. I think that's part of the point.
I think that, yeah. I think that's what they were going for. Well done. Success.
I've really only interacted with that show. I've never watched it. I've really only interacted with it through food blogs recreating Hannibal's meals with hypothetically non-human ingredients.
Again, humans. Love it. All right, let's take a hard right turn here.
Sure.
Okay. And let's talk about humble pie.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So we're all probably familiar with this phrase, eating humble pie.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I was curious where this came from, and I looked it up. And so removing the liver, heart, entrails, and other organs from a deer and cooking them used to be a common practice. And those innards were called numbles with an N.
Okay.
Yes. And this came from the old French nombles, which came from the Latin lumbulus, meaning a little loin. The word for loin was lumbus. This is also where we get the word lumbar from.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah. But anyway, the cheap innards were more often eaten by the poor. Eventually, the N was dropped to humble pie, and you can see.
With accents. Yeah. Humble pie. Sure. Yeah.
Sure.
Humble pie. Totally.
Yeah, but essentially it's deer was a popular one, but any kind of cheap innards that
okay.
If you could afford not to, you wouldn't eat, went into the pie. So eating humble pie. There you go. So when it comes to pies here in the United States, I would say most of us think of sweet pies first.
Absolutely.
Yes, and that's not the case in a lot of other places in the world, but here, sweet pies.
Mm-hmm.
But that was not always true.
Oh, no. For a lot of history, it certainly was not. And we will get into that after we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men. How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion.
...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So pies have a long history.
Oh, gosh, they do.
Yes. The first records of pie go all the way back to 6,000 BCE and ancient Egypt. At the time, they were called galettes, and they were typically made with oats, rye, barley, and wheat, and a honey filling. To cook them, people used hot coals or rocks heated by hot coals for, like, early method of baking.
Mm-hmm.
If we skip ahead to 1300 BCE, bakers started adding things like nuts and fruits to the filling. Bread dough frequently acted as the crust. One of the ways we know about this is through drawings discovered in the tomb of Ramses II.
That is delightful.
You know, I want, too, a pie depiction on my tombstone. If I ever have... I don't know. What are those called? Mausoleums?
Yeah. I would. Oh, yeah. We would get you some real good, real high quality hieroglyphs.
Thank you.
All the pineapples and all the pies.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. In the future, they'll be like, what was she about?
It's clear. It's right there on the wall. Pineapple
pies
pie.
And pineapple, yes. That's all you need to know about me.
Huh.
The ancient Greeks are believed to have come up with the pie pastry, a paste made out of flour and water, as opposed to bread or bread crust. This was then commonly filled with meat. Ancient Romans adopted this practice, probably filling their early pies with all kinds of meats, including oysters, mussels, and lampreys.
Mm-hmm.
Cato the Elder included one of his time's most popular pie recipes. So this was around 150-ish BCE. The work he did around agriculture had a recipe for it, for placentas. Which was a pie.
Yes.
And these pies were sometimes used as offerings for gods. They were sort of cheesecake-like, baked in a pastry. As pies spread, people adapted recipes to fit what they had access to in their region.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Early pie crust served far more as a cooking and storage container and serving implement rather than food. Yes. In fact, the pastry part was often so tough, probably inedible.
Essentially inedible.
Yeah, essentially inedible. The crust had to be really thick to survive long baking times. For centuries, pretty much anything baked was a pie because the crust was the only container that we had.
Yeah, I mean, Pyrex had not been invented yet. Mm-hmm. And the crust would keep the heat and the steam and the juices of the product inside.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps because of this, the English called early pies there coffins, which then meant box or basket. I guess it still kind of does, even though it's more specific.
It's a specific type now.
Yes.
Yes.
Many of the first pies were savory, with tall, straight crust sealed at the top and bottom. A pie without a pastry over the top was called a trap. Just wanted to throw that in there. I like that.
Hmm.
Tough crust soaked with juices were sometimes given to the poor or to servants.
Legend puts northern Chinese meat pies to at least the 9th century CE. There's a tale of an emperor disguising himself as a commoner to go outside the palace and being blown away by the beef pastries that he found out there.
Mm-hmm.
Though these are linked to savory pancakes in Chinese cuisine, which go thousands of years further back. So... mysteries history.
Fun times.
Meanwhile, by that same 9th or 10th century CE, Persian and other Middle Eastern literature mentioned these savory, handheld, triangular pastries like the samsa, which is probably the root of those similar triangular things that we mentioned earlier. These may have been filled with minced meats, nuts, and dried fruit at fancy tables. Both sweet and savory samsak were mentioned in a 13th century cookbook, with the meaty one flavored with coriander and cumin and pepper, cinnamon, mint, and ground almonds. Samosa were recorded at Indian royal courts as early as the 14th century, reportedly filled with stuff like mincemeat, peas, pistachios, and almonds, or with a meat, ghee, and onion.
Mm.
Mm. but the lower classes were eating these types of savory pies as well, or probably a little bit less fancy, probably fewer spices, you know.
Right.
Whatever was on hand. But reportedly, like merchants traveling the Silk Road carried these as snacks, and that's how they became a popular street food across the Middle East and South Asia.
Well, they are convenient in that way because they do come in their own
container.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
During the 13th century, we see the first mentions of mince pies as European crusaders coming back from the Middle East with recipes involving spices, meats, and fruits arrived, and they became associated with religious meals.
Okay.
Mince pies were subsequently banned during the 17th century under Oliver Cromwell's rule. Because as a Puritan, a pie was too indulgent for Cromwell.
That guy.
Because of this, people were eating pie in secret for 16 years.
Wow.
And this is one of those things when I read, I thought surely that's apocryphal or that's just a fun story. Seems to be true. It seems to be. It's like, no pie.
That guy, I'm telling you.
That guy. According to the dictionary, the word pie was used to refer to the food all the way back to 1301. Canterbury Tales mentions pie for eating.
P-Y-E.
Yes. Mm-hmm. During medieval times in Europe, pie crust was still much, much tougher, often requiring a spoon or some other implement to crack it open. These crust could be baked first and would form sort of a pie in the pot. Like, this is where we get the term pot pie,
I guess.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sweet pies were called tarts, with recorded recipes dating back to the 1300s. Since sugar was so expensive during the time, a lot of these tarts didn't have sugar unless you were in the upper class.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that tart is still British English for a sweet pie, and pie generally means a savory pie. Though there does also seem to be a distinction between tart being open-topped and a pie being closed up as well.
Yes. I ran into that a lot when I was doing my preliminary research.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. We have to talk about animated pies.
Animated pies.
Yes.
Like in Beauty and the Beast or something?
No. I was like, is there an animated pie?
I don't think there is. I was stretching.
Yes. Okay. These were a popular form of entertainment at European banquets during the 13 and 1400s. Okay, so you might have heard of them through this nursery rhyme. Sing a song of sixpence, 4 and 20 blackbirds baked in a pie. When the pie was opened, the birds began to sing. Wasn't that a dainty dish to set before the king? Or maybe you remember some birds flying out of Joffrey's pie if you watched Game of Thrones. So yeah, these were pies that had live animals and sometimes humans and sometimes other things inside them. Anything from birds to rabbits to turtles to frogs ready to emerge when the crust was cut.
I love the frogs thing.
I do too. I just think it would be chaos.
Right?
You're like, frogs hopping everywhere. Are birds flying out and attacking people? I don't know.
I don't think they probably wouldn't attack people. I mean, I don't know the hearts of birds.
That's true, but you are suspicious of the hearts of birds.
I am.
We've discussed this at length.
For some reason, producer Andrew still likes me despite that.
Well, I'm glad that you two were able to work it out. So, just to be clear, the animals and or people were not baked into the pie.
No.
Yes. They were added after the crust had been cooked, either via a hole in the bottom or by lifting the top and then replacing it back.
Sure, yeah.
Right. French King Charles V loved to throw banquets with all sorts of entertainment when he reigned during the 1300s, and food was no exception.
Mm-hmm.
His chefs created what they called subtlety. I didn't look into it, but I have a real hope that this is where the word subtlety comes from.
I suspect.
Yes. And these were ornamentally disguised foods, frequently not meant to be eaten. Also, as time went on, subtlety could refer to all kinds of entertainment, not just food.
Okay.
To add further confusion. But anyway, one famous example came from the chef of the Duke of Burgundy when he made a pie big enough to house 28 musicians that played as the pie was opened, plus a, quote, captive girl meant to symbolize how the church was captive in the Middle East.
Huh.
28 musicians inside a pie.
Plus a lady.
Plus a lady. That's a lot. That's been a big pie. In 1626, at a banquet for King Charles I and Queen Henrietta Maria, they were served a pie with a very small child dressed in armor inside. And he rose up as the pie was opened and bowed to the queen. His name was Geoffrey Hudson, though after this he was dubbed Lord Minimus. He served her for almost 2 decades, was twice kidnapped by pirates, and jailed after a duel. And why is this not a movie? Or a show on HBO.
Oh, gosh. The Adventures of Lord Minimus. I want it.
I think it'll happen.
That's
too good a story.
Right?
It's too good. A 1598 book out of Italy about throwing banquets had this recommendation. Oh, God. Here we go.
You got this? You got this?
I think I can do it.
Are you sure? Okay. Yes. Okay. I believe in you.
Okay.
Okay.
To make pie that the birds may be alive in them and fly out when it is cut up, make the coffin of a great pie or pastry. In the bottom thereof, make a hole as big as your fist, or bigger if you will. Let the sides of the coffin be somewhat higher than ordinary pies, which done, put it full of flour and bake it. And being baked, open the hole in the bottom and take out the flour. Then having a pie of the bigness of the hole in the bottom of the coffin aforesaid, you shall put it into the coffin, with all put into the said coffin round about the aforesaid pie, as many small live birds as the empty coffin will hold, besides the pie aforesaid. And this is to be at such time as you send the pie to the table and set before the guest, where uncovering or cutting up the lid of the great pie, all the birds will fly out, which is to delight and pleasure shew to the company. And because they shall not be altogether mocked, you shall cut open the small pie, and in this sort you may make many others, and like you may do with a tart. That's a recipe you wouldn't really see so much these days.
No, that's the first one of those that I've ever read.
Me too, and it was quite fun.
Oh, gosh. I'm just thinking about just baseline sanitation issues of having a pie that you're going to eat and a whole bunch of birds.
Yes.
In the same unit of space.
It is true. That.
But, you know, at a certain point, have fun with it, right? Enjoy yourself.
I suppose. I mean, we still do those cakes where ladies pop out.
I don't think you eat. I think it's a...
Is it not a real cake?
I think it's like cardboard and plastic.
Oh, wow. I've been living a lie this whole time. I didn't know.
I could be wrong. I'm not sure. Maybe we'll have to do an episode on it.
Maybe. But in the meantime...
Yes. Meanwhile, during all of this time, since the 8th century... Muslims had been living in and sometimes ruling in parts of what's now the Iberian Peninsula. And they brought with them meat pies, possibly the same ones that inspired samosa. Those went on to inspire empanadas. By the 1520s, a Catalan cookbook mentions seafood empanadas.
Mm. Also during the 16th century, pastry ingredients started appearing in recipes. This is probably because this is when cookbooks started being made not only for professional chefs.
Yeah, or like not quite like professional chefs like we think of them today, because that wasn't a thing yet outside of royal courts. But rather, like, up until this point, cookbooks would have been ways for royal courts to share information and like show off to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But after the printing press was invented in the 1400s, books slowly became available to like not just the upper class, but also, like, the regular upper class.
Ah.
Yeah. So these early printed cookbooks around the 16th century and books of household management were for the heads of estates and for their staff. And so, therefore, recipes got a little bit more practical to actually share something useful.
Yes.
Rather than just being like, look at what I did.
I am better than you.
Yeah.
Records show that the English and Irish were making shepherd's pie and cottage pie by the 17th century. Lamb and vegetable filling for shepherd's pie, Shepherd's tinned lamb makes sense. Mm-hmm. Beef and vegetables for cottage pie, and both topped with potatoes. So this means I should have been making cottage pie for my Harry Potter parties.
Because you were using ground beef.
Well, yes. I should have been using ground beef.
Oh.
Because, you know, it's based in Scotland, so I should check out what's going on there.
I suspect both, honestly.
So, both, yeah.
Yeah.
At this point, definitely.
Well, yeah.
These were frugal pies, ways to use up leftovers and cheap available ingredients. Again, that's a recurring theme. Cottage is thought to refer to this and that the lower class who were probably making and eating that pie frequently lived in cottages.
Mm-hmm.
As European colonists arrived in North America, they brought with them their favorite pie recipes and then adapted those recipes to what was available in the New World. Pie was often present at every meal for early American pioneers, and since food is such a huge part of any kind of celebration, pies became involved in all kinds of contests and celebrations, like fairs or picnics, the blue ribbon pie.
Yeah.
The move westward of people gave way to the development of more regional pies as well. In the 1600s, settlers in Quebec ate tortillere as a part of their post-Christmas Eve mass celebrations.
I've seen a lot of things about how pies were connected to holidays.
Yes.
In these times.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
From Martha's historic cookbook, one of George Washington's favorite pies was filled with sweetbreads.
Which are neither sweet nor bread.
Nope.
And you can see our episode, therefore named, about the ingredient from June of 2017 for more on that.
Yes. Also a video we did.
Oh, we did. Oh, that was a delicious video.
It was very, very good. And it has one of the most, I think, touching visuals of people sharing, like laughing and sharing times over food.
Oh,
because Tyler, who was our the video editor and producer at the time, we didn't know it, but he left the camera running as we ate. We shared this food together, sweetbreads. And we were just, like, laughing and having a good time and eating and clearly enjoying ourselves. And he sped it up, and I don't know. Every time I watch it, I get a little touched. Like,
oh, I'll have to go back and watch it.
That's the power of food.
Oh, gosh.
Yes, yes. So you can find that online. It is available.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1800s, Germany's Emperor William I was treated to his favorite pie when visiting England's Queen Victoria, a pie with, here we go, an entire turkey, stuffed with an entire chicken, stuffed with an entire pheasant, stuffed with an entire woodcock.
Oh,
now that is quite the pie. That is a filling pie.
That is a pie.
Mm-hmm. But okay, why is it that pies in America are most often associated with dessert?
Why is it, Annie?
Why is it? Well, when sugar became more affordable, sweet pies became more the norm in the United States. According to Carl Degler in Out of Our Past, the forces that shaped modern America, quote, pie in England to this day means a meat pie, but in the colonies that was a pot pie. Pie was reserved for the fruit pastry. And I believe he goes on to say, or somebody else in this kind of argument about, what, how did this happen in the U.S., said it was just kind of us being spiteful, too. Like, we're going to call this thing pie. We're going to call your meat pie pot pie. Like, doing our own thing.
Yeah, that's the very, like, America going through their, like, I mean, not just teenager phase, but
right.
But it was a very rightful rebellion.
Yes, yes. And we've talked about that before as well with cookies.
Oh, right.
Right, so maybe it's a dessert type. We got sugar over here, so. But that doesn't mean that savory pies weren't around in the United States. Going back to Amelia Simmons's American Cookery, the ratio of sweet to savory recipes in that for pies is about even.
Okay.
But as sugar plantations proliferated across the southern United States and elsewhere nearby, sweet pies were super exciting. I was trying to really imagine this other day. Imagine you had never really had access to that level of sweetness. It had kind of been out of your reach.
Yeah.
And then this whole world opens up to you. And, of course, you'd be like, oh, we could put sugar in there. We could put sugar in there.
like, why not? Let's do it. Yeah.
I get it. I totally see.
Drunk on sugar power.
Drunk on sugar power. When Europeans settled New Zealand in the 19th century, they fundamentally transformed the food culture there. And one of the first recorded instances of a meat pie in that country dates back to 1863, most likely a mutton pie.
Yeah. Australia and New Zealand, both very big meat pie cultures.
Very much.
Mm-hmm.
I believe someone wrote in and called it, like, it's an icon. It's an icon.
Yeah.
During Prohibition America, the alcohol content of canned mince pie filling shot up by 14%.
Ha.
Ha, indeed.
In 1947, speaking of Australian meat pie icons, the brand 4-20 debuted. Yes, it's named after the 4-20 Blackbirds poem. Today, 4-20 is just a mainstay of Australian football stadiums and convenience stores. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
Mm. In 1951, the first frozen meat pie hit the supermarkets, a Swanson's chicken pot pie.
Yes, I've had many of those.
Oh, yes, me too.
Mm-hmm. In 1977, a meat pie-based fast food chain in New Zealand, Georgie Pie, opened the doors of its first stores. It closed in the 1990s, but in 2013, McDonald's added Georgie Pies to its menu.
Huh.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's still on it, if anyone write in and confirm. In 2003, Louisiana legislature named Nacogdoches meat pie as the official meat pie. And I've actually had these. Yeah, for those who haven't, it's like an empanada filled with spiced meat. In the legend of Nacogdoches meat pies, 19th century vendors used to shout, "Hotta meat pies." Historians put forth theories that they originate from both French and Spanish settlers.
Sure.
Probably is a coming together of a lot of things.
As is with many things in Louisiana food culture, yeah.
Absolutely. So that's about what we have to say on meat pies, although we could have kept going and going
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, this is one that I had to really hold myself back on.
Yeah.
As so to avoid just all of the, we'll have to do individual episodes on many, many, many things.
Yes, many things.
Many delicious things. Like I was doing research for this last night as the hour was growing late and
yes.
I was needing dinner and mm-hmm. I was like, oh no.
as I have said, I was recently in Montreal and it was very cold up there, quite cold. And somebody in the group, because I went for a puppetry festival, mm-hmm. and we were having a group dinner, and somebody got shepherd's pie.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I freaked out, and he didn't know me. Like, we knew each other, but not that well. And uh-huh. all of a sudden, I was like, oh, my God, that's so exciting. Can I take a picture? And he was like, okay, let's step back. What's going on here? And I said, oh, I'm on a food podcast. Like, okay. We just did an episode on meat pies.
Oh, that's delightful.
Yeah. He was very patient. I'll probably be posting that picture soon.
Oh, awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool.
Fun times.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I have some little like frozen samosas in my freezer that I somehow did not eat all of last night. But I'm coming for you, samosas.
Your time is limited.
I've never made a meat pie at home. I pie crust, again, like just kind of pisses me off. But I'm thinking I'm going to have to make one.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I think I might cheat or not technically make a shepherd's pie because I don't think I do the bottom crust.
Oh, you're making a casserole. That's different.
And I've been lying to myself and my friends all this time. My Harry Potter themed parties are inaccurate. I am brought shame to my house of Gryffindor.
Yeah, 5 points from Gryffindor, dude.
Dang it.
Says the Hufflepuff, who's by the kitchens and knows these things.
I couldn't afford to lose the points.
Oh.
Ay.
Gryffindor always wins anyway. It's okay.
Not always.
I know. There's like that one time.
And I still think about that one time. I will update my... If I ever have a Harry Potter themed party again, which seems very likely,
I shall
update the menu.
Okay. Good.
I'm glad I could meet your standards. Maybe we could join up and you can make a meat pie and I can make a meat pie and then we'll mark off two things on our list.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. And then everyone gets to eat more meat pie.
Love it.
Perfect.
Let's do it.
Okay. In the meanwhile, we do have some listener mail, but first we've got another quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking.
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise.
Give me some smiles.
Cheese.
Give me more beaches.
Beaches.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion.
That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6
million? Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with
Listener Mail.
It feels like a very, like, I don't know, something in Lord of the Rings. You eat a lot of meat pies.
Sure, yeah.
And for some reason, I associate gruffness with Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
Maybe I just Gimli really made an impact on
that. Yeah, yeah.
I got to explain my process.
No, I...
Oh, gosh. Chelsea wrote... First, I want to thank you both for your wonderful podcast. Oh, thank you. I have been listening since day one and have learned so much. Today, I listened to your macadamia nut episode, and I wanted to share a brief story related to macadamia nuts and dogs. To save you unnecessary panic, this story ends happily, so don't worry.
Oh, gosh, I worried.
Yes, I'm so good you had that in there. About 10 years ago, my parents went on vacation to Hawaii. While they were there, my mom purchased about a dozen boxes of Mauna Loa chocolate-covered macadamia nuts to bring home as gifts for friends and family. Each box of a dozen chocolate clusters was individually shrink-wrapped and taped shut. When she got home, she placed the boxes in a shopping bag and left them in our garage so that they would stay cool and not melt.
Cool. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Later that day... We all went out to dinner, and when we returned, we were shocked and horrified to see a trail of chocolate boxes littering the floor of the garage all the way to the dog door and continuing on into the house.
No.
Each box had been torn apart and chewed to pieces.
Enraged that her precious gifts had been so heartlessly devoured by our dog, my mom barged into the house and shouted for our schnauzer, Coda, to come. Not surprisingly, Coda was keeping a low profile, or so we thought. We found him a moment later lying on the floor in the family room, desperately trying to run to us, but unable to stand.
Oh!
From what we could tell, his front legs were working, but his hind legs were immobile. Sure enough, the sight of my dad sent him into joyful panic, and he proceeded to drag himself across the floor like a seal to get to him. We all freaked out and rushed him to the animal hospital to see what was wrong. Turns out schnauzers are particularly susceptible to macadamia nut poisoning. Fortunately, the vet told us that the paralyzing effects were only temporary and would go away within a few days. Once it became clear that Coda would be okay, everyone's mood shifted from fear and anxiety to smug satisfaction that our greedy dog had gotten the karma he so richly deserved. None of us had gotten to try the magical macadamia nut clusters, and now we never would. Of course, it didn't take long for his pitiful seal crawl and sad face to have us all spoiling him for the next few days, but I don't think my mom ever forgave him for what he did. I hope you find this story as entertaining as our family does. We still laugh about it, and it's become a fond memory and a valuable lesson for all of us. Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, those are some sour grapes. I like it. I
have one story that's close to this. Well, no, I probably have more, but one that comes immediately to mind, where I ate an entire 64-ounce Hershey's bar to myself during Constantine, the movie.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, within 10 minutes of that movie being over, my friends who've been making fun of me, like, you shouldn't do that. And I was like, ha, 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 ha. I was projectile vomiting just chocolate.
Oh, gosh.
It lasted for so long that, like, my friends eventually said, look, I got to go home. I feel better.
Wow.
So that was pretty quick. Just desserts.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry that that happened to you, and I'm glad that an important lesson was learned that day.
Semi-learned. I still overeat quite often, but not
maybe
to
not,
that.
Maybe not 64 ounces of chocolate.
No, I don't do that anymore.
Good for you.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Rose wrote, it is my civic duty to bring to light a very important topic, pierogies versus piroshkis. Not knowing the difference can have real-world consequences. It can cost you your livelihood. I kid you not. I know because it happened to me. In your recent episode on pierogies, they were described as pierogi are filled dumplings of Central and Eastern European origin made by wrapping unleavened dough around a savory or sweet filling and cooking in boiling water or pan frying. Personally, for the longest time, I was not fond of pierogies. I'm not a huge fan of the mashed potato filling, but I'm a huge fan of piroshkis. From Wikipedia, piroshki are Russian and Ukrainian baked or fried yeast-leavened boat-shaped buns with a variety of fillings. Piroshki are a popular street food and comfort food in Far Eastern Europe. In Seattle, we have both a small Polish community and Ukrainian-Russian community, meaning we have both pierogies and piroshki shops. Mostly piroshki, and even one of the most famous establishments in Pike Place Market, Piroshki Piroshki, will have long lines wrapped around the corner to get one of their baked treats as cinnamon spice fills the air from their apple piroshki.
Mm.
With a variety of fillings, both sweet and savory, all wrapped in a fluffy yeasted dough and baked to golden perfection, piroshki can't be beat. Well, if you think those are fighting words, you're not wrong. Many years ago, I applied to a coveted work position in Japan. After going through several rounds of interviews, testing, and even flying to LA for the last interview stage, I thought I had a great chance at getting the position. The last interview was a group interview, and for some stupid reason, I brought up my love of piroshkis. Out of nowhere, one of the other interviewees pops up and corrects me and says, no, you mean pierogies. Aghast and a little startled, I said, no, piroshkis, a baked delicious treat with different fillings from Russia. The second interviewee chimes in, no, that's a pierogi, and they're boiled, not baked, and they're Polish. Now, I was just mad. First off, do not tell me there is no such thing as a piroshki, and second, don't fight with me about it during a job interview. After several back and forth, the other interviewees decided I made up piroshki because I was too embarrassed to admit I was wrong. Needless to say, I did not get the job, and those two yutzes did. So, yes, people, they are a thing.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, yeah, don't correct somebody in a job interview.
Yeah, that's so rude.
Come on now.
Oh, this is also why I strongly disapprove of group interviews.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, like, I would say, Rose, that you probably actually, like, sort of lucked out. Because any company that puts you through that does not have your best interests at heart.
Yeah, then they don't even know about pierogi.
Yeah, and they certainly didn't learn their lesson.
No, they
about
didn't.
About delicious pierogi.
No, they didn't. Lessons. Very important lessons.
Yes.
I do want to add another thing from Montreal. I met someone from Alberta.
Oh, yeah?
With the giant pierogi.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And she had pictures on her phone, and she showed me the giant egg.
Oh.
It's huge, and it moves.
Oh, cool.
I know.
All right.
But she was telling me all about all the pierogi options where she's from, and I felt such jealousy.
Yeah. We'll just have to go.
Too bad, so sad. Twist our arm. Well, thanks to both of them for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Saverpod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thank you, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.